Osho, Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 1, The Book of the Secrets, A New Commentary. Discourse number 32, given in Bombay, India.
The first question. Please discuss whether the techniques we have discussed until now in Vigyan Bhairav Tantra belong to the science of yoga instead of the actual and central subject matter of Tantra. And what is the central subject matter of Tantra? This question arises to many. Techniques that we have discussed are also used by yoga. The same techniques, but with a difference. You can use the same technique with a very different philosophy behind it. The framework, the background differs, not the technique. Yoga has a different attitude towards life, just the contrary to Tantra. Yoga believes in struggles. Yoga is basically the path of will. Tantra doesn't believe in struggles. Tantra is not the path of will. Rather, on the contrary, Tantra is the path of total surrender. Your will is not needed. For Tantra, your will is the problem, the source of all anguish. For yoga, your surrender, your willlessness is the problem. Because your will is weak, that's why you are in anguish, suffering. For yoga, for Tantra, because you have the will, you have the ego, the individuality. That's why you are suffering. Yoga says, bring your will to absolute perfection and you will be liberated. And Tantra says, dissolve your will completely, become totally empty of it, and that will be your liberation. And both are right. This creates difficulty. For me, both are right. But the path of yoga is a very difficult one. It is just impossible, nearly impossible, that you can attain to the perfection of the ego. That means you have to become the center of the whole universe. The path is very long, arduous. And really, never reaches to the end. So what happens to the followers of yoga? Somewhere on the path, in some life, they turn to Tantra. That happens. Intellectually, it is conceivable. Existentially, it is impossible. If it is possible, you will reach by yoga also. But generally it never happens. Or even if it happens very rarely. A Mahavira, sometimes centuries and centuries pass, and then a man like Mahavira attains through yoga. But he is rare. the exception and he proves the rules. But yoga is more attractive than tantra. Tantra is easy, natural. And you can attain through tantra very easily, very naturally, effortlessly. And because of this, tantra never appeals you so much. Why? Anything that appeals to you, appeals to your ego. Whatsoever you feel is going to fulfill your ego will appeal you more. You are gripped in the ego. Yoga appeals very much. Really, the more egoist you are, the more yoga will appeal you. Because it is pure ego effort. More the impossible, more appealing to the ego. That's why so much appeal of the Everest to reach to the top of the Himalayan peak. It is so difficult. And when Hillary and Tenzing reached on the Everest, they felt a very ecstatic moment. What was that? Ego fulfilled. They were the first. When the first man landed on the moon, can you imagine how he felt? He was the first in all history. And now he cannot be replaced. He will remain the first in all the history to come. Now there is no way to change his status. The ego is fulfilled deeply. There is no competitor now, and there cannot be. Many will land on the moon, but they will not be the first. But many can land on the moon, and many will go to the Everest. Yoga gives you a higher peak and more unreachable end, the perfection of the ego. Pure, perfect, absolute ego. Yoga would have appealed to Nietzsche very much because he said the energy that is working behind life is the energy of will to power. Yoga gives you the feeling you are more powerful through it. More you can control yourself, more you can control your instincts, more you can control your body, more you can control your mind. You feel powerful. You become a master inside. But this is through conflict. This is through struggle and violence. And it always happens more or less that a person who has been practicing for many lives through yoga comes to a point where the whole journey becomes drab, dreary, futile. Because the more ego is fulfilled, the more you will feel it is useless. And then the follower of the path of a yoga turns to tantra. But yoga appeals because everyone is egoist. Tantra never appeals in the beginning. Tantra can appeal only to the higher adepts. Those who have worked on themselves, those who have been really struggling through yoga for many lives, then tantra appeals them because they can understand. Ordinarily, you will not be appealed by tantra. Or if you are appealed, you will be appealed by wrong reasons. So try to understand them also. You will not be attracted by tantra in the first place because it asks you to surrender, not to fight. It asks you to flow, not to swim. It asks you to move with the current, not to go upstream. It tells you nature is good. Trust nature. Don't fight it. Even sex is good. Trust it. Follow it. Flow into it. Don't fight. No fight is the central teaching of Tantra. Flow. Let go. It cannot appeal. There is no fulfillment of your ego through it. In the first step, it asks for your ego to be dissolved. In the very beginning, it asks you to dissolve it. Yoga will also ask you, but at the end. First, it will ask to purify it. And when it is purified completely, it dissolves. It cannot remain. But that is the last in yoga. And in Tantra, that is the first. So it will not appeal generally. And if it appeals, it will appeal for wrong reasons. For example, if you want to indulge in sex, then you can rationalize your indulgence through Tantra. That can become the appeal. If you want to indulge in wine and woman and other things, you can feel attracted towards Tantra, but really you are not attracted towards Tantra. Tantra is a facet, a trick. You are attracted to something else which Tantra, you think, allows you. Tantra always appeals for wrong reasons. Tantra is not to help your indulgence. It is to transform it. So don't deceive yourself. Through Tantra, you can deceive yourself very easily. And because of this possibility of deception, Mahavira will not prescribe Tantra. This possibility is always there. And man is so deceptive that he can sow something else for something else that he intends through it. He can rationalize. For example, in China, old China, there was something like Tantra, a secret science. It is known as Tao. Tao has similar trends like Tantra. For example, Tao says that it is good if you want to be freed of sex. It is good that you should not stick to one person. One woman, one man. You should not stick to one if you want to be freed. So Tao says it is better to go and changing partners. This is absolutely right. But you can rationalize it. You can deceive yourself. You may be a just sex maniac. And then you can think that I am doing Tantra practice. I cannot stick to one woman. I am to change. And many emperors in China practiced it. They had big harems only for this. But Tao is meaningful. Tao is meaningful if you look deep down into human psychology. If you know only one woman, sooner or later, your attraction for that woman will wither away. But your attraction for a woman will remain. you will be attracted by the other sex. But this woman, your wife, really will not be of the opposite sex. She will not attract you. She will not be a magnet for you. You have become accustomed to her. Tao says, if a man moves amidst women, many women, he will not only be beyond one, he will go beyond the opposite sex. The very knowledge of many women will help him to transcend. And this is right, but dangerous. Because you would like it. Not because it is right, but because it gives you license. That is the problem with Tantra. So in China also, that knowledge was suppressed. It had to be suppressed. In India also, Tantra was suppressed. Because it says many dangerous things. They are dangerous only because you are deceptive. Otherwise, they are wonderful. Nothing has happened to human mind more wonderful and mysterious than Tantra. No knowledge is so deep. But knowledge has always its dangers. For example, now science has become a danger. Because it has given you very deep secrets. Now, you know how to create atomic energy. Einstein is reported to have said that if he is given again a life, rather than being a scientist, he would like to be a plumber. Because his whole life, he looks back, has been futile. Not only futile, but dangerous to humanity. And he has given one of the deepest secrets. But to the man who is self-deceptive. I wonder, the day may come soon when we will have to suppress scientific knowledge. There are rumors. And there are secret thoughts amid scientists that whether to disclose more or not, whether we should stop the search or should we go further, because now it is dangerous ground. Every knowledge is dangerous. Only ignorance is not dangerous. You cannot do much with it. Superstitions are always good, never dangerous. Homeopathic. Give the medicine, it is not going to harm you. One thing is certain. Whether it is going to help you or not depends on your own illusions. One thing is certain, it is not going to harm you. Homeopathy is harmless. It is a deep superstition. It can only help. Remember, if something can only help, then it is superstition. If it can do both help and harm, then only it is knowledge. A real thing can do both help and harm. Only an unreal thing can only help. But then the help never comes from the thing. It is always a projection of your own mind. So unreal, illusory things are good in a way. They never harm you. Tantra is science. And deeper than atomic knowledge. Because atomic science is concerned with matter and Tantra is concerned with you. And you are always more dangerous than any atomic energy. Tantra is concerned with the biological atom, you, the living cell. life consciousness itself, and how it works, the inner mechanism. That's why Tantra became so much interested in sex. One who is interested in life and consciousness will automatically become interested in sex, because sex is the source of life, of love, of all that is happening in the world, of consciousness. So if a seeker is not interested in sex, he is not a seeker at all. He may be a philosopher, but he is not a seeker. And philosophy is more or less nonsense. Thinking about things which are of no use. I have heard Mullah Nasruddin was interested in a girl. But he had very bad luck with girls. No one would like him. And he was going to meet a girl for the first time. So he asked a friend. He said, "What is your secret? You are wonderful with women. Simply you hypnotize them. And I am always a failure. Give me some clue. I am going on a date for the first time with this girl. So give me some secrets." So the friend said, "Remember three things. Always talk about food, family, philosophy." "Why about food?" Mullah said. He said, "Ask. Talk about food, because then the girl feels good. Because every woman is interested in food. She is food for the child, for whole humanity. She is food. So she is basically interested in food." Mullah said, "Okay. And why family?" So the man said, "Talk about her family, so your intentions look honorable." And Mullah said, "And why about philosophy?" So the man said, "Talk about philosophy that makes the woman feel that she is intelligent." So Mullah rushed. Immediately, the moment he saw the girl, he asked, "Hello, do you like noodles?" The girl, startled, said, "No." So the mullah asked the second question, "Have you got a brother?" The girl was even more startled. "What type of date?" So she said, "No." So for a moment, mullah was at a loss. How to start philosophy? But he started. Just for a moment, he was at a loss, and then he asked, "Now, if you had a brother, would he like noodles?" This is philosophy. Philosophy is more or less nonsense. Tantra is not interested in philosophy. Tantra is interested in actual existential life. So Tantra never asks whether there is a God, or whether there is moksha, or whether there is a hell and heaven. No. Tantra asks basic questions about life. That's why so much interested in sex and love. They are basic. You are through them. You are part of them. You are a play of sex energy and nothing else. And unless you understand this energy and transcend it, you will never be anything more. You are right now nothing but sex energy, but you can be more. But if you don't understand this and don't transcend it, you will never be more. The possibility is just a seed. That's why Tantra is interested in sex, in love, in natural life. But the way to know it is not conflict. Tantra says you cannot know anything if you are in a fighting mood. Then you are not receptive. And then because you are fighting, the secrets will be hidden from you. You are not open them to receive. And when you are fighting, you are always outside. If you are fighting sex, you are always outside. If you surrender to sex, you reach the very inner core of it. You are an insider. And if you surrender, many things become known. You have been in sex, but always with a fighting attitude behind. That's why you have not known many secrets. For example, you have not known the life-giving forces of sex. You have not known because you cannot know. That needs an insider. If you are really floating with sex energy, totally surrendered, sooner or later you will arrive to the point when you know that sex can not only give birth to a new life, sex can give you more life. To the lovers, sex can become a life-giving force. But for that, you need a surrender. And once surrendered, many dimensions change. For example, Tantra has known, Tao has known, that if in sex act you ejaculate, then it cannot be life-giving to you. There is no need to ejaculate. Ejaculation can be totally forgotten. Ejaculation, Tantra and Tao both say, is because you are fighting. Otherwise, there is no need. The lover and the beloved can be in deep sexual embrace, just relaxing into each other, with no hurry to ejaculate, with no hurry to end up the affair. They can just relax into each other. And if this relaxation is total, they both will feel more life. They both will enrich each other. Tao says a person, a man can live for 1,000 years if he is not in any hurry with sex, just deeply relaxed. If a woman and a man are deeply relaxed with each other, simply meeting with each other, absorbed into each other, not in any hurry, not in any tension, many things happen, alchemical things happen. Because the life juices of both meet. Electricity of both, bioenergy of both meets. And just by this meeting, because they are anti, one is negative, one is positive, they are antipoles. Just by meeting with each other deeply, they invigorate each other, make each other vital, more alive. They can live for long, and they can live as never becoming old. But this can only be known if you are not in a fighting mood. And this seems paradoxical. Those who are fighting sex, they will ejaculate sooner. Because the tense mind is in a hurry to be relieved of the tension. New research says many surprising things, many surprising facts. Masters and Johnson, they have worked scientifically for the first time that what happens in deep intercourse. They have come to realize that 70% men are premature ejaculators. 75% men. Before there is a deep meeting, they have ejaculated and the act is finished. And 90% women never achieve any orgasm. They never reach to a peak, a deep fulfilling peak. 90% women. That's why women are so angry, irritated, and they will remain so. No meditation can help them easily. And no philosophy, no religion, no ethics will make them at ease with the man they are living. And then their frustration, their anger. Because modern science and old tantra both say that unless a woman is deeply fulfilled, orgasmic, she will be a problem in the family. Because that which she is lacking will create irritations and she will be always in a fighting mood. So if your wife is always in a fighting mood, think again about the whole thing. It is not simply the wife. You may be the cause. And because women are not achieving orgasm, they become anti-sex. They are not willing to go into sex easily. They have to be bribed. They are not ready to go into sex. Why they should be ready? Because they never achieve any deep bliss through it. Rather, they feel after it that the man has been using them. They have been used. They feel like a thing used and then discarded. The man is satisfied because he has ejaculated. Then he moves and goes to sleep and the wife goes on weeping. She has been just used. And the experience has not been in any way fulfilling to her. It may have relieved her husband, her lover, her friend, but it has not been in any way fulfilling to her. 90% women even don't know what orgasm is because they have never known it. They have never reached a peak of such a blissful convulsion of the body that every fiber vibrates and every cell becomes alive. They have not reached. And this is because of an anti-sexual attitude in the society. The fighting mind is there, so the woman is so repressed, she has become frigid. And the man goes on doing the act as if it is a sin. And he knows it is guilt. It is not to be done. And while he is making love to his wife or beloved, he is thinking of some Mahatma, how to go to the Mahatma and how to transcend this sex, this guilt, this sin. It is very difficult to get rid of the Mahatmas. They are always there. Even while you are making love, you are not two. One Mahatma must be there. There you are three. And if no Mahatma, then the God is watching you doing the sin. The concept of God in people's mind is just of a peeping Tom who is always watching you. This attitude creates anxiety. And when anxiety is there, ejaculation comes soon. When there is no anxiety, ejaculation can be postponed for hours, even for days. And there is no need, if the love is deep and both bodies can invigorate each other, ejaculation may be completely ceases. And for years, two lovers can meet with each other without any ejaculation, without any wastage of energy. They can just relax with each other. Their bodies meet and relax. They enter and relax. And sooner or later, sex then is not an excitement. It is an excitement right now. Then it is not an excitement. It is a relaxation, a deep let go. But that can happen only if first you have surrendered inside to the life energy, life force. Only then you can surrender to your lover or beloved. Tantra says, if this happens, and this Tantra arranges how it can happen, Tantra says, never make love while you are excited. This seems very absurd, because you want to make love when you are excited. And both partners excite each other so that they can make love. And Tantra says, in excitement you are wasting energy. Make love while you are calm, serene, meditative. First meditate, then make love. And in love also, don't go beyond the limit. What do I mean, don't go beyond the limit? Don't become excited and violent. So your energy is not dispersed. If you see two persons making love, you'll feel they are fighting. Small children, if sometimes they see their father and mother, they think the father is going to kill the mother. It looks violent. It looks like a fight. It is not beautiful. It looks ugly. It must be more musical, harmonious. The two partners must be as if they are dancing, not fighting. Singing one harmonious, just creating an atmosphere in which they both will dissolve and become one, and then they relax. This is what Tantra means. Tantra is not sexual at all. Tantra is the least sexual thing. And so much concerned with sex. And if through this relaxation let go, nature reveals you its secrets, it is no wonder. Then you begin to be aware what is happening. And in that awareness of what is happening, many secrets come to your mind. First, sex becomes life-giving. As it is now, it is death-giving. You are simply dying through it, wasting yourself, deteriorating. Secondly, it becomes the deepest natural meditation. Your thoughts cease completely. When you are relaxed with a lover totally, your thoughts cease. The mind is not there. Only your heart beats. The mind is not there. It becomes a natural meditation. And if love cannot help you into meditation, nothing will help. Because everything else is just superfluous, surfacial. If love cannot help, nothing will help. Love has its own meditation. You don't know love, you know only sex. And you know the misery of wasting energy. Then you get depressed after it. Then you decide to take the vow of brahmacharya. And this vow is taken in depression. This vow is taken in anger. This vow is taken in frustration. This is not going to help. A vow can be helpful if taken in a very deep, relaxed, meditative mood. Then, otherwise you are simply sowing your anger, frustration and nothing else. And you will forget the vow within 24 hours. The energy will have come again. And just as an old routine, you will have to relieve it. So sex for you is nothing but something like a sneeze. You feel excited, and then when you sneeze out, you feel relaxed. Something that was bothering in the nose is relieved. So something bothering at the sex center is relieved. Mantra says sex is very deep because it is life. But you can be interested for wrong reasons. Don't be interested in tantra for wrong reasons. And then you will not feel that tantra is dangerous. Then tantra is life transforming. Those methods we have done have been used by yoga also, but with a conflict, with a fight attitude. Tantra uses the same methods, but with a very loving attitude. And that makes a great difference. The very quality of the technique changes. The technique becomes different because the whole background is different. And you have asked, what is the central subject matter of Tantra? You. You are the central subject of Tantra. What you are right now and what is hidden in you that can grow. What you are and what you can be. Right now you are a sex unit. And unless the unit is understood deeply, you cannot become a spirit. You cannot become a spiritual unit. Sexuality and spirituality are two ends of one energy. Tantra starts with you as you are. Yoga starts with as your possibility is. Yoga starts with the end. Tantra starts with the beginning. And it is good to start with the beginning. It is always good to begin with the beginning. Because if the end is the beginning, then you are creating unnecessary misery for you. You are not that ideal. You have to become a god, the ideal. And you are just an animal. And this animal goes berserk because the idol of the god. It goes mad, it becomes crazy. Tantra says, forget the god. If you are the animal, understand this animal in its totality. That understanding itself, the god will. And if it cannot grow through that understanding, then forget it. It can never grow. Ideals cannot bring your possibilities out. Only the knowledge of the real will help. So you are a central subject of Tantra. As you are and as you can become. Your actuality and your possibility. They are the subject matter. Sometimes people get worried. If you go to understand Tantra, God is not discussed, moksha is not discussed, nirvana is not discussed. What type of religion Tantra is? Tantra discusses things. You feel disgusted. You won't like to discuss them. Who wants to discuss about sex? Because everyone thinks he knows. Because you can reproduce, you think you know. Nobody wants to discuss sex, and sex is the problem of everybody. Nobody wants to discuss about love, because everyone sees he is a great lover already. And look at your life. It is just hatred and nothing else. And whatsoever you call love is nothing but a relaxation, a little relaxation of the hatred. Look around you, and then you will know what you know and what you don't know. I am reminded. I heard about one Jewish Hasid teacher, Baal Shem. He was going every day to his tailor for a rope, and the tailor took 6 months to make a simple rope for the fakir, poor fakir. When the rope was ready and the tailor gave it to Baal Shem, Baal Shem asked, "Tell me, even God had only 6 days to create the world. Within 6 days, God created the whole world. And you took 6 months to make this poor man's robe." Baal Shem remembers the tailor in his memoir. The tailor said, "Yes, God created the world in 6 days, but look at the world, what type of world he created." "Yes, he created the world in 6 days, but look at the world." Look around you, look at the world you have created. Then you will come to know that you don't know anything. You are just groping in dark. And if everyone else also is groping in dark, it does not mean you are living in light. Because everyone else is all groping in the dark, it's good. Because there is no comparison. But you are in dark. And Tantra starts with you as you are. And Tantra wants to enlighten you about basic things which you do not deny. Or if you try to deny them, it is at your own cost. Second question, how can one convert the sexual act into a meditative experience? Should one practice special position sex? Positions are irrelevant. Positions are not very meaningful. Really, the attitude of the mind, not the position of the body, the position of the mind. Change your mind, you may want to change your positions because they are related. They are not based. For example, always the man is on the woman, top on the woman. This is a egoist posture. If the man always feels he is better, superior, higher, how can he be below the woman? But all over the world, in primitive societies, woman is above the man. So in Africa, this posture is known as missionary posture. Because for the first time when missionaries, Christian missionaries went to Africa, the primitives were just couldn't understand what they are doing. They will kill the woman. It is known in Africa as the missionary posture. African primitives say this is violent. The man is on top of him. Is weak, delicate, must be on top of man. But difficult for man to think himself lower than woman, under her. If your mind changes, many things will change. many things will change. It is better the woman should be on top for many reasons. Because the woman is on top, she is passive. She is not going to do much violence. She will simply relax. And the man under him cannot do much. He'll have to relax. It's good. If he is on top, he's going to be violent. He will do much, and nothing on your part is needed to be done. For Tantra, you have to relax. So it is good the woman should be on top. She can relax better than any man. The feminine side is more passive, so relaxation comes easy. Positions will change, but don't be bothered about positions much. First, change your mind. Surrender to the life force. Float in it. Sometimes, if you are really surrendered, your bodies will take the right position that is needed in that moment. If both partners are deeply surrendered, then their bodies will take the right posture that is needed in that moment. And every day, situations change. So there is no need to fix it beforehand. That is the fault that you try to fix. Whenever you try to fix, it is fixing by the mind. Then you are not surrendering. If you surrender, then let things take their own shape. And there is a wonderful harmony. When both partners have surrendered, they will take many postures, or they will not take and just relax. But that depends on the life force, not on your cerebral decision beforehand. You do not decide anything beforehand. That decision is the problem. Even to make love, you decide. Even to make love, you go and consult books. There are books, How to Make Love. And this shows what type of human mind we have produced, how to make love. Then it becomes cerebral. You think everything. Really, you make a rehearsal mind. And then you enact it. It is a copy. It is never real then. You are enacting a rehearsal. It becomes acting. It's not authentic. Just surrender and move with the force wherever it leads. What is the fear? Why be afraid? If with your lover you cannot be unafraid, then where you will be? And once you have the feel that life force helps itself and takes the right path that is needed, that will give you a very basic insight into whole life. Then you can leave your whole life to the divine. That is your beloved. Then leave your whole life to the divine. Then you don't think, you don't plan, and you don't force the future according to you. You just allow yourself to move into the future according to him, according to the total. But how to make sexual act meditation? Just by surrender it comes. Don't think about it. Let happen. And you be relaxed. Don't move ahead. This is one of the basic problems with the mind. It always moves ahead. It is always seeking the result. And result is in the future. So you are never in the act. You are always in the future, seeking a result. That seeking a result will disturb everything. It damages everything. Just be in the act. Forget the future. It is to come. You need not worry about it. And with your worries, you are not going to bring it. It is already coming. It has already come. Forget about it. You just be here and now. And sex can become deep inside of being here and now. That is, I think, the only act now left in which you can be here and now. You cannot be here and now while in your office. You cannot be here and now while you are studying in your college. You cannot be here and now anywhere in this modern world. Only love can be here and now. But you are even there, you are not. You are thinking of the result. And now many modern books have created many new problems. Because you read a book, how to make love, then you are afraid whether you are making it right or wrong. You read a book, how posture is to be taken, what type of posture. And then you are afraid whether you are taking right posture or not. And psychologists have created new ways in mind. Now they say the husband must remember that whether his wife is achieving orgasma or not. So he is worried whether my wife is achieving orgasma or not. And this worry is not going to help, anyway will become the hindrance. And now the wife is worried whether she is helping his husband to relax totally or not. So she must smile. She must show that she is feeling very blissful. And everything comes false. And worried about the result. And because of this worry, those results will never come. Forget everything. Follow in the moment and allow your bodies know well, they have their own wisdom. Your body is constituted of sex cells. They have an internal program. You are not asked at all. Just leave to the body and the body will move. This leaving together, altogether, this let go will create the meditation automatically. And if you can feel it in sex, then you know one thing, that whenever you can surrender, you will feel the same. Then you can surrender to a master. It is a love relationship. You can surrender to a master. And then in his feet, while you will be putting your head will become empty. You will be in meditation. Then there is no need even of a master. You can just go out and surrender to the sky. You know how to surrender, that's all. You can go and you can surrender to a tree. And that's why it looks so foolish, because we don't know how to surrender. We see a person, a primitive man, a villager, going to the river, surrendering himself to the river, calling the river the mother, the divine mother, are surrendering to the rising sun and calling the rising sun the great God, are going to a tree and putting his head on the roots and surrendering, and for us it becomes superstitious. You say, what nonsense you are doing, what the tree will do, what the river will do, they are not goddesses. And what is the sun? The sun is not a god. Anything becomes a god if you can surrender. So your surrender creates divinity. There is nothing divine. There is only a surrendering mind which creates divinity. Surrender to your wife and she becomes divine. Surrender to your husband, he becomes divine. The divinity is revealed through surrender. Surrender to a stone, and there is no stone now. The stone has become a statue, alive, a person. So just to know how to surrender. And when I say how to surrender, I don't mean to know the technique. I mean, you have got a natural possibility of surrendering in love. Surrender there and feel it there. And then let it be spread all over your life. Third question. Please explain whether the Anahatanad is a type of song, or if it is a state of total soundlessness. And also explain that in which way can the state of soundfulness be equal to the state of total soundlessness. Anahatnath is not a type of sound. It is soundless. The soundlessness is heard. To express it is difficult, because then a logic question arises, how soundlessness can be heard? Let me explain it. I'm sitting on this chair. If I go away from the chair, will not you see my absence in the chair? It cannot be seen by one who has not seen me sitting here. He will see simply the chair. But a moment before I was here and you have seen me sitting here, and if I move away and you look at the chair, you will see two things, the chair and my absence. But that absence will be seen only if you have seen me. And you have not forgotten there, that I was there. We are hearing sounds. We only know sounds. So when that soundlessness comes, anahatanat, we feel every sound has disappeared. And the absence is felt. That's why it is called anahata nad. It is also called nad. Nad means sound. But the anahat changes the quality of sound. Anahat means uncreated. Uncreated sound. Every sound is a created sound. Whatsoever sound you have heard, they are all created. That which is created will die. I can clap my hands. A sound is created. It was not before. And now it is no more. It was created and it has died. A created sound is known as ahatanad. Uncreated sound is known as anahatanad. The sound that is always, which is that sound that is always? It is not really a sound. We call it a sound because the absence is heard. If you live on a railway station and one day the railway union goes on a strike, you will hear something no one can hear. You will hear the absence of this traffic of trains coming and going and moving. I was traveling in the past for at least 3 weeks every month. In the beginning it was very difficult to sleep in the train, and then it became difficult to sleep at home. So I was sleeping only in trains, because the sound of the train was missed. Whenever I will reach home, it was difficult, because I will miss, and I will feel the absence. We are accustomed to sounds continuously. Every moment is filled with sounds in the mind. Our head is constantly filled by sounds and sounds and sounds. When your mind goes away, moves up or down, goes beyond or below, when you are not in the world of sounds, you will hear the absence. That absence is soundlessness. But we have called it anahata nad. Because it is heard, so we call it nad. Sound, and because it is not really a sound, we call it anahata, uncreated. Uncreated sound is contradictory, because sound is created. Uncreated contradicts. So all deep experiences of life have to be expressed in contradictory terms. If you go and ask a master like Eckhart or Jacob Bohme, are the Zen masters Huihai Huangpo, are Bodhidharma, Nagarjuna, are Vedant and Upanishad, everywhere you will find two contradictory terms whenever the deeper experience is talked about. The Vedas say he is and he is not about God. You cannot find a more atheist expression, he is and he is not. He is far and he is near. He is far away and he is also near. Why contradict? Upanishads say you cannot see him, but unless you see him, you have not seen anything. What type of language is this? You cannot see him, and unless you see him, you have not seen anything. Lao Tse says the truth cannot be said, and he is saying it. This is too, is a saying. And he says the truth cannot be said, and if said, it becomes untrue. And then he writes a book and says something about the truth. Contradictory. One student came to a great old sage, and that student said that if you can forgive me, master, I want to relate you something about me. I have become an atheist. Now I don't believe in God. So the old sage asked, for how many days you have been studying scripture, Vedas? For how many years? So the man, the seeker, the student said, near about 20 years I have been studying the Vedas, these scriptures. So the old man sighed and said, just 20 years? And you have the nerve to say that you have become an atheist? The old man said, just 20 years studying Vedas and you have the nerve to say that you have become an atheist? The student was puzzled what this old man is saying. So he asked, I'm puzzled. What are you saying? You make me more confused than I came here. The old man said, go on studying the Vedas. In the beginning one said God is, only in the end one says God is not. To become an atheist, you will have to travel much into theism. God is the beginning. God is not is the end. Don't be an atheist. He was even more puzzled. God is and God is not has been uttered by those who know. God is uttered by those who don't know, and God is not is also uttered by those who don't know. Those who know, they uttered both simultaneously, God is and God is not. Anahatanad is a contradictory term, but used with much consideration, with deep consideration, it is meaningful. It says it is felt as a sound, and it is not a sound. It is felt as a sound because you have only felt sounds. You don't know any other language. You know only the language of the sounds. That's why it is felt as sound, but it is silence, not sound. And explain that in which way can the state of soundfulness be equal to the state of total soundlessness? It is always so. The zero and the absolute both mean the same. the zero and the absolute. Both mean the same. For example, if I have a jar and it is completely empty, and I have another jar which is completely filled, both are complete. One is completely empty, another is completely filled, but both are complete. Both are perfect. If the jar is half filled, it is half filled and half empty. You call it half empty, you can call it half filled. But when it is completely empty or completely filled, one thing is common to both, the completeness. Soundlessness is complete. You cannot do anything more to make it more soundless. Understand this. You cannot do anything more to make it more soundless. It is complete. Nothing can be done. You have come to a point beyond which there is no movement possible. If the sound is total, you cannot add anything to it. You have come to another limit. You cannot go beyond it. This is common, and this is meant. One can say it is soundlessness because no sound, everything has become absent. You cannot reduce anything through it. It is complete. Or you can say this is complete sound, full sound, absolute sound. Nothing can be added to it. But in both the cases, the indication is for perfection. Perfection, absoluteness, wholeness. And it depends on the mind. There are two types of mind and two types of expressions. For example, if you ask Buddha what will happen in deep meditation, when one achieves samadhi, what will happen? He will say there will be no dukkha. There will be no pain. He will never say there will be bliss. He will simply say there will be no pain. Painlessness. If you ask Shankara, he will never talk about pain. He will simply say there will be bliss, absolute bliss. And both are expressing the same experience. Buddha saying no pain refers to the world. He says all the pains I have known are not there. And whatsoever is there, I cannot relate in your language. Shankara says there is bliss, absolute bliss. He never talks about the world and the pain. He is not referring to your world, he is referring to the experience itself. He is positive, Buddha is negative. But their indications are towards the same moon. Their fingers are different, but what they finger, the indicate is the same. Enough for today.